2023 saw a record number of new businesses being created here in America, with 5.5 million new companies being registered within a year. Data hasn't been published for 2024 yet, but most expectations suggest this record could be broken again. At the same time, it seems like every pre-revenue, pre-idea, pre-clue startup that vaguely mentions artificial intelligence is getting billions of dollars thrown at them by cashed-up investors. And yet, there is a problem that you may not have noticed. There just aren't that many companies anymore. In 1996, the market hit an all-time record of 8,090 companies publicly listed on the various stock markets around America. Today, almost 30 years later, despite the economy being 3 times larger and the market handling about 7 times as much capital, there are fewer than half as many companies publicly available to buy shares in. There are a lot of theories about what is going on here. From private equity making Wall Street irrelevant, corporate consolidation, to the dwindling of savings of average investors. But there are some even bigger issues at play here. So, where the f*** did all the companies go?
File, the largest toy store chain in the U.S., Toys R Us, has filed for bankruptcy protection.
Involving Purdue Pharma, the company that made billions selling the prescription painkiller.
Time is almost up for Bed Bath & Beyond, filing for bankruptcy protection and liquidating hundreds of stores.
Some tech companies go public a bit too early. We still see tons of opportunity to change and grow the business quite a lot.
These 7 companies have risen and risen until they've become basically all of the stock market.
At the time this video was released, 34.1% of market capitalization of the S&P 500 was comprised of just 7 companies: Microsoft, Nvidia, Apple, Amazon, Meta, Alphabet, and Tesla. If you throw in Berkshire, Broadcom, and Walmart, then that is over half of the entire market in just 10 companies. According to data from Standard & Poor's, at the end of 2015, the top 10 companies only accounted for 16.2% of the market. So in less than a decade, the market concentration within the biggest companies has tripled. Even if there were more companies that the public could invest in, they would matter a whole lot less. This trend is bad for investors, bad for workers, bad for consumers, and strangely, it's actually even bad for the companies themselves. But I am getting ahead of myself. First, we need to know why this is happening. One of the big changes that most analysts are pointing to is the growing role of private equity. We have discussed the details of exactly what private equity is in a few videos, but if you are new here, all you need to know is that it's a firm that invests in companies or other assets that are not listed on public exchanges like the NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange. According to the investment data firm Preqin, the amount of money that private equity firms are now managing in America alone is up 1,200% since the year 2000. So as this has grown, market share has been taken away from public exchanges. For a lot of companies, it's just not worth it to meet the compliance requirements of public listings because then early investors and management have to listen to thousands of stockholders instead of just 1 or 2 big private equity firms. Average investors also don't have that much money, and the average person owns most of their shares through managed retirement accounts anyway. Those retirement funds also invest in private equity firms, so going public doesn't really offer anything that can't be achieved by just selling to a private equity firm unless the company is absolutely massive. Even when private equity firms want to take profit on their investments, there is a growing trend of them just selling their assets to other, even bigger private equity firms. According to records from Apollo, one of the biggest private equity firms in the world, the number of companies financed by private equity increased by over 9,000 since the turn of the millennium. If these companies had to raise money the old-fashioned way through an IPO, then the number of public companies would be much more in line with the historical trend. So mystery solved, right? Wrong. There is one more story than just private equity ruining everything. Again, just having the same number of companies as there were 30 years ago wouldn't account for the fact that the economy is much larger overall. If the relationship between businesses and business activity held, there should be something like 25,000 public companies, but there are actually less than 4,000. Not only are companies getting more concentrated, but their ownership is getting more concentrated as well. The largest shareholders in almost every major company listed in America and most of the rest of the world today is some combination of BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. Now, you have probably seen the endless thumbnails about these companies being evil empires plotting world domination. And honestly, that's probably not true. The reality is that they manage assets on behalf of millions of individual investors. They don't actually own that themselves. The index investment products they offer are also really convenient for most investors who want diversified exposure to the market but are unable to buy and balance hundreds of shares individually because that would take an inordinate amount of time and money. But even though this reality is a little bit less exciting than an evil empire operating from the shadows, it doesn't mean that its growing popularity is any less damaging to your actual financial situation. and to see why, we are going to have to roleplay as Wendover Productions for a second. According to public 13G filings, the top shareholder of Delta, Southwest, United, and American Airlines is the Vanguard Group, which owns millions of shares in each company, primarily on behalf of their clients through its index products. Collectively, American, Delta, Southwest, and United control more than 70% of the market for air travel within America, according to the commercial aviation data firm AOG. Individually, the best way for these companies to grow their business would be to take market share from one of the other three by offering lower prices, better service, or more convenient routes. This is the basis of good, healthy competition. And in the bad old days, when shareholders would largely own one company they believed in, this is how it would work. But when their largest shareholders also own an equal stake in every other business in the market, they are a little bit less keen on crushing their opposition. If Delta pushed hard against United on all of their routes, then they might take market share from them. But for their shareholders, all they have done is cut into the profit margins to win a war against themselves. Instead, the growing pool of shareholders that own stakes in all of these companies equally are going to be financially better off if these companies grow their margins by extracting more from their customers through cost-cutting service, more fees, and confusing bookings. If you can believe that that would ever happen. Now, even this by itself isn't the whole story, because, spoiler alert, this little game isn't even good for the shareholders either. So it's time to learn how money works to find out why companies are going extinct. This video is sponsored by Vessi, aka the sneakers that have quietly taken over my daily routine. You know those everyday moments that don't make the highlight reel? Coffee walks, daycare drop-offs, Target runs? Vessi is made for all of it. Their weekend sneaker is the one I keep by the door. It's waterproof, lightweight, and honestly just easy. Slip them on and you're out the door in seconds. I've worn them in the rain, over wet sidewalks, and even through a few too close puddles. And, well, they're still dry and still comfy. Plus, they look good. Clean, minimal design that works whether I'm in joggers or jeans. They're comfortable enough to wear all day and durable enough to handle whatever the day throws at you. I've stopped checking the weather because it just doesn't matter anymore. Make every day a little easier. Visit Vessi.com/money now for 15% off your first pair at checkout and start exploring with confidence. Now, hot take alert, but if they are all well regulated and they are not in vital industries, sometimes monopolies can be good for consumers, at least for a little while. Netflix once had a near monopoly on content streaming, and for a few years, it was really good. The price was reasonable, and in return, you could get access to an extensive library of on-demand content without the challenges and risks that came with sailing the high seas. But seeing the opportunity, companies like Disney, Apple, Paramount, NBC Universal, Amazon, and Warner Brothers all introduced their own offerings to the market and started locking their own content with their own subscriptions. Today, to get access to a comprehensive library of content, you would need about 5 or 6 different subscriptions, easily costing more than the cable this was all supposed to replace. Even the studios arguably did better under the Netflix arrangement, because they could license their content for additional revenue instead of losing billions of dollars every year trying to take market share. Now, this is actually nothing new. As new technologies emerge, lots of businesses try to get into the market and naturally only a few survive. Even the very first international corporations, the Dutch, British, and French East India companies, were effectively just state-sanctioned monopolies because that was the only way they would work. The difference now is that instead of raising money and starting a new business from scratch to take advantage of a new marketable technology, existing businesses just use their own cash to do it in-house. Netflix is the only major player in the streaming market that wasn't already a film studio or major technology company before getting into streaming. And outside of digital media, the lesson is the same. Big is beautiful. A company like Amazon can offer same-day delivery and global cloud computing services because of its scale. Individual brick-and-mortar retailers could be content with operating out of a few select locations, but to compete directly with Amazon would require an investment of hundreds of billions of dollars into an immense network of warehouses and distribution centers. It's easier for most businesses to just give up and sell through Amazon instead. Legacy brands like Toys R Us or Bed Bath & Beyond just can't compete on price or convenience with their smaller scale and higher overhead. Social media, like the brands under Meta, only have value if everybody is using the same service, so users naturally gravitate towards the largest providers in any particular niche. If you want to shout about how hard it was back in your day under Minion memes, you go to Facebook. If you want to shout about how hard it is under the current day under Bernie memes, you go to Reddit. And if you want to shout about how hard it is to synergistically integrate the joint development interregional self-layoff project, you go to LinkedIn. Because that's where you will find fellow boomers, fellow comrades, and fellow corpo bots respectively. Now, I know you know that antitrust regulation is severely lacking here in America and most of the rest of the world. But even if we are actually good at playing Monopoly whack-a-mole, they will naturally keep popping up. Companies themselves are less resistant to being acquired because a lot of their investors are the same people on both sides. And a single entity that isn't regulated should make better returns than two entities that have to, at least pretend to, compete. Businesses getting bigger is the natural process. Big businesses have more money to invest into more growth and more opportunities. And if these companies can't create something from scratch, they will just buy it from someone who can. So far, you have seen how the shifting role of private equity in broad market asset managers has accelerated this. But there is another group that's emerged that stops a lot of companies from even existing in the first place. Ironically, venture capital is a niche of private equity that focuses on funding hopeful startups rather than large existing businesses. In theory, lots of venture capital activity should encourage lots of new business development, but the industry has realized that's not the best way to maximize returns. The best way to make money is to instead scale a business really quickly in the hopes that the big tech companies will just acquire it. A paper published by the Journal of Information, Economics, and Policy found that this process systematically stifled genuine innovation because businesses were funded to be sold, not to actually provide value to the market. The problem is if these companies try to start a service that competes with one of these companies' existing services, venture capitalists don't want to touch it because it becomes far too risky. The existing company with huge cash reserves can compete with the fledgling startup until they have run out of cash and then go back to business as usual. This creates what the economists affectionately branded kill zones, where startups find it really hard to find investors once they threaten the existing big businesses. The most laughably ironic thing about all of this is that yes, businesses with more market power are bad for consumers, who they have more price control over, and even worse for employees who may only have one or two companies where they can get a job with their skills. But the great business extinction hasn't even been good for investors. As private equity, venture capital, and asset management firms have become larger players between investors and the companies they are investing in, they have soaked up more money in commissions, fees, consulting dues, and performance incentives. Income from the finance industry used to account for roughly 3.5% of GDP until the early 70s, but today it accounts for over 10% according to data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. That's 10% of the country's entire economy dedicated to paying bankers and financiers to move assets around between one another. The assets held by these institutions has also grown from less than 50% of GDP in 1980 to over 180% today. This means that a lot of these firms aren't too big to fail. They are just too big. Regulation should be here to deal with these misaligned incentives. But the last time the FTC ever broke up a company was right here in 1984 with AT&T. Since then, the only punishment for anti-competitive use of market power has been fines. And well, you know the thing about fines. Now, if all you have learned from this is that finance bros are sponging up an ever-increasing share of our economic activity, go and watch this video to find out what these jobs actually do, because it's a lot different than you might expect. And don't forget to like and subscribe to keep on learning how money works.